Episode 5.
Episode 5, Season 2, which means I'm not very good at maths, but episode 13 in total. Who have we got on today, Stephen Rick?
We've got Joe Berthelot, who is an expert in copy and copywriting and content creation. Looking forward to this one. Such a big part of any marketing role is creating awesome content. And especially awesome copy. Hi, I'm Steve Rick.
And I'm Tim Elliott.
And welcome to the RE of Marketing podcast.
A podcast where we rethink, replay and remark on all good things to do with branding and marketing.
Who was it we spoke to the other week, Tim, who was talking about copy on one of the podcasts? Steve Noss, was it?
Stephen Noss. Oh, no, Michael Owen said about the language. No, Steve Noss about the language.
Yeah, he was talking about how internal
comms.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we really got to pick up with Joe around how powerful words are, but also how we can look to create awesome content to gain interaction from our for the people who we're looking to serve.
But, I mean, I know. Content marketing is a popular label over recent years. I don't know about the labels that we marketing append, including content marketing, because I've been going, you know, over two decades in marketing, and I've never seen a piece of marketing without content. So I struggle to wonder why it's a new thing. It's just marketing, surely. But very important part of it, because without the message, nothing else really matters. Like, it's very difficult to get the idea over, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. No, definitely.
Yes.
But I'm just sitting on that thought of all marketing is content.
Well, not all content is marketing. Some content is exam results and essays and novels.
No, so all content isn't marketing, but all marketing is content.
All marketing has content, yeah.
Oh, this needs to go in the new little mini-series that we're going to release.
Yeah. Yes. So we've so just before Joe arrived, we've decided if you're browsing our podcast and your chosen podcast app, all podcast apps are available, you might find some weird solo episodes of this called Rebytes. So we're starting. We love podcasting, and we figured out this is our content. This is our native home for content creation. So we're going to record the little things called Rebytes that are tasty morsels supporting our main missions, like these big, lumpy, long-form, deep and meaningful episodes that we do together to build up a real good audio and content strategy around our purpose, right?
Yeah. I think it's a nice move in a direction that I haven't seen for podcasts before. Don't get me wrong, listeners. We will be doing a series 3, which we're in discussion about at the moment, and there will be a series 4 and a series 5. But these little morsels, these little rebites, are to help fill the gap, but also keep on top of all the different thoughts that we have and all the understandings that we take away from what we're doing. We want to be able to pass on good knowledge to people. We want to have great conversations with you who are listening. So, yeah, look out for those. They'll be coming out sporadically.
And we
every week, but sporadically.
Yeah, as and when we have something good to share. So to let people in on our strategy, because we're early doors, this is a few into recording season 2 after season 1, so we're still young, but we figure out that we'll do quarterly good seasons together, right?
Yeah.
Good 8 to 10 episode seasons of either me and him speaking, us interviewing interesting people, a combination of those. But we're going to do them quarterly. They're going to be 8 or 10 episodes long, and really kind of hour-long episodes deep diving into a topic or going off on a total tangent, as we do, it seems.
Hello, Tim. Hello, Joe.
Hello.
Hello. All right, well, Joe.
Well, I'm all right, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, good, good. Nice to see you following your successful Creative Mornings Derby appearance.
I'll look at him putting a plug
thank
in.
Thank you very much. I know.
He'll be talking about Chappers next in his mastermind classes.
No, different audience of Chappers. Awkward. Love you, Chappers.
Don't we all?
We're so glad that you're here.
Thanks.
We've had quite a few conversations. This second series is built on conversations with experts in what they do. The first series was me and Tim just talking about a load of rubbish, to be fair.
Never.
Basically, pub talk is what the first series was. But everything that's come up in every episode, we've talked about content, copy creation, all these different things, which is all based around marketing. And I think it's great that you got here because we would love to talk to you about content strategy and also copy and how powerful words are. We had a guest on earlier on in this season called Stephen Noss, who talked about the power of language inside Cooper Parry and how it was more important to get the language right than it was about any form of visual. And I think it's just a really interesting conversation.
So on that, just to give you context, because it's not out yet when we recorded this, so you can't listen to it. But we asked Steve what the most proud bit of work he's done, because Cooper Parry are an incredible brand and blah, 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 right? But we won't revisit that. But and he mentioned his internal comms, right? And I was like, that is the first time I've ever seen that. And they are very big on culture, and it ticks a big box. But internal comms being the most proud bit of work you do is a good signifier of how important language and message is over medium and design and creativity, which it is on the external of an organisation. You know, it's all on the stuff we put out as organisations and brands can be kind of designed to grab attention, be a bit flashy, maybe a bit shallow, maybe there to entertain more than educate. And to hear somebody that's proud of the stuff that nobody sees unless you all work there, right? The stuff that inspires their employees to deliver the experience that they promise in their brand, the customer experience. It was just an enlightening thing, wasn't it, Steve? Other Steve?
Yeah, massively.
And I think that shows that, like, it sounds like they're a company that really look after their staff and their, you know, their internal people, and that in turn makes them a better company for their customers. And if they are actually giving proper thought to their content, like to their internal communication, then it just shows kind of how much they care, I think.
I have a question, Joe, to kick us off.
Okay.
Right. What's the difference between content and communication? I don't know the answer, by the way. But it just came to me and I thought, hey, I've got an expert on my podcast. Let's ask her.
Yeah, let's. do you know, it's one of those that, like, there's always things going around. What's the difference between copy and content? What's the difference between communications and content? Now, I don't know. This could, you know, people could completely disagree with this. In my mind, copy is more kind of the written word. Content can be anything around, like any way of communicating with your audience. So, like videos, infographics, and stuff like that. Content may need copy, or it may not. You know, we were looking Wordy Wednesday that we were talking about before we started recording. Last week, I think we featured a John Lewis advert. There was no script to it, and we got quite far into the process without realizing this, which was a bit funny because we were suddenly like, there aren't any words. We're a copywriting agency. but then I was like, no, let's run with this. There was a slogan at the end. But let's run with it because we completely recognise that not all content needs copy. Not all content needs words. It had a hugely strong message. It was the one with the little dragon who set fire to everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And it had a hugely strong message with it. There was no way of missing the message that it carried. But it had no words. But it was excellent content. So that's the copy content thing. Communications, I think, is just like embodies everything, really. I mean, you can communicate in so many ways, you know, with people. And I think communications is a much sort of maybe more of a like an umbrella term in a way.
Maybe communications. I was just thinking out loud while you're here. Maybe communications is the with your previous definitions, the tactification of content. So the stuff how you don't do. We record this on Zoom, and Steve's doing a very confusing face that's making.
Yeah, because you said the word tactification, which is definitely not a word. Please tell me that's not a word, Joe.
Tactification is a word, Joe. We've got
My face kind of did what Steve's did, to be honest. But yes. I love learning a new word. So tell me, Tim.
So tactification is the opposite of strategic work, right? It's when people focus on the actions that are involved.
Well, tactical, you mean? Tactical.
No, tactification. It's a movement of people becoming more tactical.
Right, I'm going to do my Susie Dent bit in the corner and just get it.
Do it. Look it up.
That's fine. I'll carry on with my diatribe.
You carry on. Carry on with your point. Sorry for interrupting.
That's fine. So the tactification of content. So content is the message, right, with the meaning, and can be multi-format, from what I hear. It may include copy, it may not.
Yep.
The communication is how you get that stuff out, right? The tactification of it, right? The implementation of it.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, that would make sense. Yeah. Yeah. I just think communication for me is such a wider term than I would say you've got communication, then content, then sort of copy, getting more like almost more specific. But yeah, communication is how you get a message across to people.
So where do you start in when you get a client or a project or whatever to do? Like where's the starting point for content or copy, or like what comes first?
Chicken or egg? It's hard.
Yeah.
It depends on the client. It depends on the project. Sometimes. So let's take, I mean, so many different forms of copy and content.
Okay.
Let's take web copy, for example. There's always the thing of should design come first or should copy come first? And there's no right or wrong answer. Sometimes I really like having the sort of mock-up web page, and it's got lorem ipsum with word counts, and I know exactly kind of what I need to write in what space. And sometimes seeing the visual of that really helps sort of the inspiration for the copy. And I also like the challenge of getting a message across in a certain number of words, you know, give or take a few.
Yeah.
So I quite like that. However, sometimes it is the right thing to do the copy first. So for like an About Us page, for example, sometimes it needs to be short, sometimes it needs to be longer, but it's quite nice if, you know, you can do the copy first and then the design be moulded around it.
Is that because you're trying to create a story, Joan?
Yeah.
You're trying to take people on a journey of copy, aren't you? And then you can write a design around it. Whereas if it's the other way around, you're trying to force a story into something.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, say, a product description, you know, usually they need to be short, snappy, and you can work with a low word count. And an About Us page, you know, 300 words might be absolutely fine. But it may need longer to get the proper story across. And if you're having to miss out really key points, then it kind of will be really detrimental to getting that story across. And in terms of like where to start with writing the copy, I mean, often a conversation is where to start. I get briefed in all different ways. I get verbal briefs. I get, you know, bullet pointed briefs. It comes in all forms, and not one is right or wrong. It depends largely depends on what's best for the client. Because if the client prefers a verbal brief, it's better for me to take a verbal brief than to say to them, no, I need you to fill this form out. because that won't work for them. So it won't work for me, and the coffee won't be as good. Okay. Web copy, blog copy, you know, both can involve research as well. I can know pretty much nothing about a topic and I can still produce content on it, because I can go and, you know, do the research that I need to do. So that can be the starting point.
I didn't know if there was, like, if you, because I like a framework, right? I work on framework. Yeah. I find it easy to work with clients by teaching them a framework rather than leaving it kind of mysterious creative world. So I didn't know if there was rules that you use. I'm terrible copywriter, right? I'm rubbish at it. I know what the good copy is at the end of it. I just don't know how to get it out of here. I pointed to my head, podcast listeners. pointed to an end result. So I didn't know if there was a rule like, okay, right, what we've got to do first is decide the title, then everything else comes, or decide the punchline or the action or the idea at the centre of it, and then everything else builds it. Do you know what I mean? I didn't know if there was a golden rule, like a secret.
Well, I'm probably going to make some other copywriters' toes curl by saying this, because some copywriters will have a very strict process, I think, maybe, that, you know, you do it this way. Obviously, there's fairly loose process. I'm quite a process person as well, but there are fairly loose processes. But so much depends on the copy and what type of copy it is. You know, if it's more stats based, then yes, it's going to be a bit. There's going to be a bit more of a process behind that, because there's going to be the research and, you know, thinking about the section. You know, the sections that are going to be in the copy. If it's more of a general topic that most people know most about, there's not a lot of research there, then that's more of a kind of a feeling. And that involves me sort of sitting more and thinking, right, how do I think about this? How are people going to want to hear about it? So sometimes I've got the title. Quite often I get briefs with the title and then some, you know, some bullet points. What I like to be able to do is adjust the title if I need to, because sometimes you have to write the copy to then do the title. So some people would always write the body of the copy and then do the title. But sometimes I quite like having the title, writing the copy, and then just checking they both match, because it's kind of my springboard for it. Again, it depends on the type of copy, a blog, you know. Technically, we should be having keywords in the title, keywords in the subtitles, and then sort of dispersed throughout the copy. So, you know, for a few traditional blog, yeah, you should have title, subtitles. And, you know, if it is that type of copy, then, yeah, I'll have an idea of my title and my subtitles, and then I'll fill in the copy after research. And I tend to research, write down loads of notes, sort of get them into sections, and then write the copy. So I remember at university, like our tutors always used to say, the more research you do, the more planning you do, the easier it will be to write the essay. Right. And I try and do this, use the same approach, that if I've got good enough notes, then actually the actual writing of it shouldn't take too long. Whereas if I sit down and try and start writing and then break off, do a bit of research, then write again. So for me, it works really well to kind of have everything that I need together, be that, you know, that can be me doing research, it can be a conversation with a client, but have really good notes that have been written, rewritten, kind of categorised into the order, and then put the content together.
Yeah, I see what you mean. It's like very much all the other bits of marketing. Like, you've got to, as long as you do the bits, like the most important bits, the strategic pillars of it, like the actual body copy, the titles, the subtitles, the research, as long as they're all those boxes are ticked, you can do them in whatever order you want. Like I know from like putting together some talks and decks, sometimes I start with what's the end slide? What's the thing I want them to go away with? yeah. and then figure out how I get to that from the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it does depend on what you're doing. You know, I was writing some blogs that were more of a kind of a well-being blogs, I would say. Kind of the more touchy-feely the content is as well, the more I wouldn't necessarily plan that out so rigidly, because I think sometimes my thoughts have to evolve as I'm writing. So there will be kind of more kind of going backwards and forwards of, oh, that's developing. No, I don't need to mention that. Let's develop this a bit more. I'd say it does depend where you can plan. I think plan, but not all copy calls for that.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
I would say, like you say, like if you read a book on doing presentations, they'd probably say plan it out. Do your decks as the last thing.
Yeah.
That's not, it doesn't always work like that, does it? Because like you say, sometimes starting with the decks clarifies things in your mind a bit more.
Yeah, I have to start there, whereas a mate of mine is going to be on the podcast, Jeremy Waite, right? He publishes, he does one pages and he draws the timeline and plans it out like every 10 seconds what's going to happen. You make them. And I'm like, that's beautiful work, but I'm not capable of that. Like, I've watched hours videos of him making one of those, and I still like have no doubt in my mind that I'm not capable of doing that. Do you know?
Yeah. And this is it. And like you wouldn't perform to your best if you did it like that.
Yeah. It's interesting.
So I imagine there's like different copywriters use a lot of, you know, there's different strategies that you can use, because I think with it being creative, it's got to be done in a way that works for you. And makes you achieve your
optimum. Would you say though, Joe, that, you know, you can everybody write, or is it a real skill to be able to write?
Well, apparently not. Apparently there are people that can't write.
But we know Tim struggles. Yeah.
I when struggle I first to write started WhatsApp. Copyright.
For money.
When I first started copywriting, I remember saying to friends and family, I feel like fraud. Why are people paying me to do this? I don't get why other people can't do what I'm doing. And it's only by talking to more and more people, and obviously, you know, as things grew with Crescent Copywriting, talking to clients and things, that apparently people can't. They can't process their thoughts. There are people that are much more talkers than writers. And they can't process their thoughts properly when they write them down. I mean, there's a whole host of reasons why people use Crescent Copywriting. And sometimes it's just they don't have time. They can actually write decent content, but they don't have time to do it.
Yeah.
But largely it's that people just, can't do it in a polished enough way.
Should we be worried about polishing now, though? So it was one of the questions I'll ask a little bit later on, but I'll bring it up now, is grammar's really key to some people, whereas to others, it doesn't really matter. So Tim and I are very much of, I don't know where a comma goes, really. I think I got taught it's when you breathe. So I put it where I breathe. My wife sees it. Any copy that I wrote and the comma's in the wrong place, she gets really frustrated.
Yeah, I'm with your wife, I'm afraid.
Yeah. There is yin and yang in this world, isn't there?
Yeah. I am a complete grammar geek. and I think it's really important. It puts me off. If I go onto a website, it puts me off if it's not well written. Like, I'm quite harsh and I judge the company for it. But it's like, could they not have just paid that bit extra to put it through a proofreader at least? Don't even get a copywriter in. Just put it through a proofreader and make sure that, you know, everything's where it should be. And if that isn't done, I see it as really shoddy. And that, you know, gosh, there's so many ways that we communicate with each other these days that... You've got websites and things that I think should be tip top, but then you've got WhatsApp, where, you know, some people don't even use full stops. Yeah. And it's just, it's where do we draw that line? And, well, that's okay on WhatsApp. But it's not okay in other areas. And I think there's a big crossover there now that people, there's so many ways of chatting informally. I think people are getting into bad habits.
Do you feel that could be, and this is going to be really out there, could this be an evolution of language moving forward?
Could, definitely. And there's things that we do now that would never have been done in the past.
Yeah. So we're not talking about Shakespearean times. We don't speak in how Shakespeare wrote, and it's evolved from there, and we came from hieroglyphics, and we came from drawing.
Definitely.
And actually, we've stayed quite stagnant, haven't we, with how we use language for quite a few years now.
Yeah, and the idea of grammar going makes me want to cry. Because it's just what I am about. But I've only just made my peace with the fact that you can start a sentence with and or but. But that's evolution of language.
I like the evolution of language. I think that's a good kind of point, like a good point, because we all know that Google and search and Alexas and stuff like that are all written on what's called a natural language processing, right? Yeah. So to understand this language that we are doing, right? We are, I don't know, maybe I'm not, but I write how I talk anyway, right? Which is terrible, I suppose. But
I think that's a decent. I think there's a big argument for writing copy as though you're having a conversation with someone, but it still needs full stops.
But it still needs full stops, yeah.
Unless it's in WhatsApp.
Okay.
My WhatsApp messages are very grammatically correct. I can't leave out a capital letter.
So. So in this new, because we've talked about some big kind of thinky kind of slightly left field topics on this podcast. So it's nice to have super practical, like a real practical thing, right? Grammar tip one, takeaway one, folks. Grammar doesn't matter in WhatsApp unless you're Joe.
Ooh, I'm only doing it
to make their faces funny, people. It's going to be a rubbish podcast episode, but it's the faces.
It's all about the faces.
But it's, you know, I think it's like anything, right? It's not an and but. There's a famous marketing professor who writes for Marketing Week called Mark Ritson. I know Steve knows him. I don't know if you've come across him, Joe. But he did a talk recently called Bothism, which he knows isn't a word, before we stick that along with tactification.
No, well, actually, in my research corner of Dictionary Corner, my Susie Dent style of research, Mark Ritson was the guy who came up with tactification as well.
Yeah, it's true.
So what's the definition, Steve?
There is no definition.
There's not an official.
He's got a post called The Tactification of Marketing.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. So
bothism, right? And bothism. So he says, look, there's no, because there's a big discussion in the wider marketing community, like about performance marketing, which is a ridiculous term, and brand marketing, right? And they're going, well, like performance marketers go, oh, it's all about like short-term attribution and clicks and blah 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 blah. And brand people are going, well, it's about building long-term brand value so you can do good work. And it's not like you need both, right? And it's probably the same with language, right? We're probably moving into an era of voice. We're doing a podcast now, we've got Alexa, where things are not going to be like, communication may be more verbal or a higher percentage verbal than it is written, but it doesn't mean that written should be like that would make, when stuff is written, when people are reading, right, it needs to be bang on. Like if you bought a book and it was written poorly, like it'd be super difficult to read. I'm imagining, because I haven't read a book that's super difficult to, like, that's written poorly, because it's a book, like,
yeah.
But you know, I think that we've got to understand the world of bothism, to nick Mark Ritson's non-word.
Yeah.
And be all right with that.
Yeah, and I am a big believer in that, and you've got to let things evolve because they just naturally do, and there's no point, like you say, we'd still be talking like Shakespeare if not. And I'm big for language changing and making up words like bothism. I like new words like that, but if it is something that is printed or on a screen and it's on, you know, something official like a website, got to be right. Can't be shoddy. Can't be reading like a WhatsApp WhatsApp or a text. You know, I don't judge my friends when they use bad grammar in a WhatsApp message.
Are you sure you're not judging, Joe?
Well, I've had to rein it in.
I have a side question, Joe. What do you think of tools like Grammarly?
Just I was about to ask exactly the same thing. Is how much trust should we be putting in AI to help us on the grammar?
Well, I use Grammarly when I'm writing copy because I'm a queen of a typo. I can. So I use that as a first kind of net to catch things. It's more of a. It's just a bit more intuitive than normal spell check. So if I've missed, you know, if I've missed an of out while I'm, you know, while I'm typing, or I've missed a letter out of a word or something, it catches it. However, it then goes through proofreading. So every single bit of copy that we do goes through a proofreader. So
a human proofreader.
A human. And Lizzie Savin is my main proofreader. And she is so meticulous. And yeah, we work really well together because we're both on the same page that grammar does matter. And, you know, correct spelling, everything, it needs to be polished. And I won't let a piece of copy go out unless it's been through Lizzie. Or another proofreader if Lizzie's got other, you know, isn't available. But nothing goes out. Clients have occasionally tried to kind of negotiate on it. And, well, could we cut the cost if it doesn't go through your proofreader? And it's like, no. Because I'm not putting my name to something that hasn't been through a proofreader. Because I know myself, you know, my grammar's good. I've studied languages and linguistics and, you know, I know my grammar's good. But you can't spot your own faults in your own copy because you're too close to it.
So there is such a thing as copy blindness then?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like when Lizzie sends something back and I'm like, how on earth did I miss that?
You've just solved like, so much with me with copyblind. That's the first time I've heard that, and my life now makes sense. I've got copy blindness.
Yeah, it's 100% a thing. Like I am very confident in my ability in the English language. However, like Lizzie will find something in everything that I write because I'm too close to it. So for me, it's just such an essential part of what we do. And I won't let something that isn't perfect go out because I judge others that do. So if I do the same, then it's hypocritical.
I think that's the beauty of being a specialist. So I would refer to you as a specialist at this thing, right? Oh, and I think, like, but early in the day, of this podcast, sorry, not today, me and Steve, we reframed marketing in episode what something, didn't
one.
We?
That was episode one of series one.
Marketing.
I was listening to that.
We worked the marketing department. We figured, right, there'd be like the specialists have a role, but they should be super specialists. I know you and Steve worked together for a previous client for a magazine, right? If you're publishing a magazine into the world, you should really have a copyright to do it, because why, like, it's ridiculous. Like a book, I would not just publish a book that I reckon I've written and it's cool. Like,
yeah, but people do.
But there's, you know, there's super valuable roles for specialists, and there's super valuable roles for the big picture thinker creative people, right? Who just go, hey, they're general. I'm not bothered about the detail-y bit, right? I just get over there.
I think that was key when I worked with Joe previously. I was that big picture thinking of what I was trying to achieve, what I knew what I wanted the magazine to do. I couldn't write copy. I can't write copy. I can get my ideas onto a page or into a paragraph or into an article at a stretch if I really sit down and really try it doing it. But I can't make sure that it's grammatically correct. I cannot ensure that actually it makes sense, because I'm like Tim, I write as if I'm speaking in my head.
Mm.
And actually, to the audience that we was putting into at that time, it didn't need that. The audience needed something else. They needed to read it from an analytical point of view. It needed to be absolutely spot on with grammar. Otherwise, you would have lost your brand potential with that audience.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good example. That's kind of where... I think it's a good example that shows the value of a copywriter. That, you know, when we were doing those magazine articles, you know, that brief was kind of a hybrid of your written brief and your verbal brief, because you'd give me a document and then we'd get on the phone and we'd have a really good conversation about it, and I'd sort of hone into your thoughts and then kind of bring everything together into quite a structured art. You know, those articles were really quite structured. Yeah. But that's what I love doing, that being able to sort of talk to someone like you, that you very passionate about the topic of the article, and being able to push that, like to get that into a well-formed article.
Yeah.
That communicates what you want to get across in a way that the reader can easily consume it.
Is there any copywriting myths you'd like to dispel? No, is there anything, any myths that people think of around copywriting that you think, no, that's just wrong?
Yes. That it's really easy. And that you can just rattle something off because, like, you know, it's just writing. So just, you know, rattle off 500 words for a blog and, you know, it'll take you half an hour. It doesn't. You know, to write decent copy, it takes a long time. And, you know, I'm very lucky now that I work with clients that really, you know, really value copy. So I don't generally, you know, I don't get asked anymore to do blogs for £20. But I think some people, there's a couple of things, I guess. Some people don't see it as a speciality because, like we've said, like everyone can write to some extent. And it's only over recent years that I've realised that not everyone can write well enough as such. And most people confess that themselves, like, I just can't write. But it does take a lot longer than people think to put together decent copy. And, you know, we work quite a lot with creative and digital agencies, and I love working with them because they know the value of copy, so they know how long it takes. And like I say, clients that aren't agencies understand the true value of it as well. So yeah, I guess that's one myth that kind of, oh, well, it's just a case of getting the words onto paper. It's not. It's about doing the research and forming it well, structuring it well, thinking about how the reader's going to feel, to think when they read it. You know, it's a lot more than just words on paper. It's about getting the response that you want from your target audience.
So how do you go about, you've had a customer approach you, how do you go about working out, you've been given a brief for something, but actually you realise that brief doesn't suit what would be a relevant content strategy or copy strategy. How do you get them to understand what a good content strategy is and how they should be going about it and how copy sits within it, rather than just thinking, I need a blog?
Yeah, I mean, usually people are quite open to it because, you know, we are lucky with sort of the type of clients that we get, and if they value what we do, then they're open to the conversation of, well, you know, while this is great, it could be a lot better if we did this and, you know, we'll take that as a starting point, but actually what we could do from there is this, this and this. So I tend to find that just being open and conversations work the best way.
I'm going to stick in a bit of a tangent, if that's all right, Joe. I remember earlier on in our conversation you mentioned you did linguistics and language and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Right, and I do a bunch of work in around helping people tell their brand story and purposeful story and stuff. And I'd still use our mate from 330 BC, Aristotle, and his logos, pathos, and ethos stuff. And because I think it's like copy and language and content is one of a narrative. To put a proper word on it, really, it's one of the only things, and it's been scientifically proven to kind of engage every element of our brain, so that physical, the emotional, and the somatic. So we get and the rational, right? So we get every ticks each one of those boxes, right? And I think there's, you know, a need for every, like, pieces of copy to hit the heart and the head, and I think it's a real skill of story and good copy that does that, because if you're looking at video or design or a billboard, right, somebody's written a brief for that, right, so copy is in it, right, the words are behind that, like the John Lewis advert we mentioned, right, you mentioned the John Lewis advert that didn't have any script to it, any words to it or something. The one with the dragon. But that's an amazing piece of storytelling, right? Without any words in it, but somebody must have written it at some point. Do you know what I mean?
But as you watch that narrative and you watch that story with no words in it, the one thing that you're doing in your head is thinking of the words that run alongside it.
Well, this is it, right? This is the narrative and the story, right? It all comes back to that narrative, whether it's, like, I'm not bothered about the format it appears for the end user, for the consumer, right? That's not the point. But the design of the narrative is the interesting bit for me, right? And in with your background of language and linguistics, like, how I don't know what I'm going to ask, but how, like... How is that done? Like, what's the process of putting kind of emotion or rationality or building credibility in with words?
Yeah, and that's the sort of stuff that really kind of gets me buzzing. Really, that you've got to make a connection with people, because if you don't, the copy's going to fall flat. I did think that this kind of topic might come up, actually, and I've got a quote. Let me just get it so that I get it right. From an American poet called Maya Angelou. It's probably quite a well-known quote, but people will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel. And that's what you want to do, that you want to create a feeling. And it kind of ties into when I was listening to the first episode of this podcast, and you were talking about Coca-Cola and Christmas. You know, that is a feeling. You know, it's not just a truck with lights rolling up down the road. You know, it's a proper feeling that it creates in pretty much everyone. Same with the John Lewis advert, you know, as soon as it's out, you know, yes, it's Christmas. It's got a feeling behind it. But
it gives me the feeling of that's expensive.
Yeah, yeah.
Any other happy feelings, obviously.
Oh, no, I just think that's the overdraft being used. It's Christmas time. That's what I think.
Mine is usually, I've not started the Christmas shopping.
I did some of mine this week.
I've started. I've got a package, delivered today.
Yeah, I started 2 weeks ago.
Shows that life is a little bit different at the minute.
Sorry, carry on, Jane.
Sorry, the complete sidetrack.
No, it's fine. So you're looking to create a feeling, whatever you're writing about. I've written all sorts of copy. I've written copy about concrete. Which you think, well, how can you make someone feel good about concrete? But you don't talk about the concrete. I don't want to know the properties of concrete if I'm reading someone's webpage. What I want to know is how beautiful my drive's going to look when you pour that concrete onto it and make my, you know, my really rough drive into a really nice feature. I'm sure there'd be more needed than concrete. But the idea is, and I think, you know, Seth Godin talks about this in one of his books, of you don't sell the thing, you sell the end result. And, you know, you don't sell the drill bits. I think Seth Godin's one is drill bits. And, you know, don't talk about the drill bit. Talk about the shelf that it's going to hang, that it's going to fix to the wall. Talk about the ornaments that you're going to put on that to make your living space so much more comfortable. And it's thinking like that that really makes a difference to copy, because that's what people want to hear. You know, what problem will you solve for them? So it's not talking about the specifics. Yes, you can have copy that needs specifics and stats and all the rest of it. But still within that, you need something that is going to create a connection with somebody.
I think that's where the skill and the value of having a specialist copywriter comes in. Because like this podcast is probably, because it's about marketing, marketers consume most of marketing content, right? There's probably a bunch of marketers out there who are decent copywriters, right? That, like, have some ability over other people. But I think that ability to take it deeper, right, to think about the connection, right, is the thing that makes copy and marketing and all the stuff that we put in the world, like, differentiated and a bit more distinctive and consumable, right? Because in another episode, we've spoken about how much, like, there's a lot of marketing that's probably ineffective. Like, quite a high percentage, I would say, that it's ineffective, because it's just, like, people are driven by how much stuff they put out. Like, and I'm the opposite end of that scale. If it was on a spectrum, like your creative, I would be on the other side of the spectrum, right? Of just going, I'm only doing it if it makes impact. I'm not doing any other stuff, right? But yeah. I think there's a bothism, right? You need a volume of decent stuff. That I think a massive skill for people like you, and why we've got you on the podcast, is that, like the creativity in the writing, even if it's about concrete, right? Even if it's about is adding the depth, adding the value into the piece of work, even if it's about a mundane subject. I remember as a young marketer, we had to build a website back in the day when I did that, about boilers. Like, boilers are all white. Yeah. They're all white boxes, and their target market is pissed off coal people. Like, that's a terrible thing to market. Like, do you know what? Like,
There's lovely stories to be told behind boilers. When you think about it, you know, what does the boiler do? It makes your home warm so that you can spend time with your loved ones in a lovely, warm home. Yeah. It makes your kids sleep at night, because kids don't sleep when it's cold. They come and bother you because their blankets have come off. Whereas you've got central heating, your kids sleep better, so you sleep better. There are actually loads of stories that you could tell about boilers, but yeah, it's really boring in essence. Like, the actual thing is boring.
So good copy always comes back to purpose again, doesn't it? It's it's leading back. Where you're talking about there in selling the, you know, the Seth Godin version of sell the thing that you're looking to create, not the thing that it actually is.
Yeah.
You know, when you talk about boilers and you're selling good night, kids getting a good night's sleep, it's, you're talking about purpose, because you're going that one or two steps beyond again, rather than what it actually is.
Yeah.
So that's marketing copy, is to think bigger, not what it actually is doing, because that's more things and benefits led anyway.
Yeah. Mm. And by doing that, you generally stand out from the crowd, because not everyone does that. And that's what you want. You want your copy, your content, whatever it is, to stand out from the crowd. And like a video that I shared in the Marketed Light webinar session that I did this week, was how all so many COVID adverts, like COVID response adverts, are exactly the same. And it's a guy, it's called 50 Odd, this guy who...
Michael Owen, he's been on the podcast.
Yes. Oh, has he?
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Episode one of this second series.
Oh, wow, okay. Well, yeah, he did this amazing thing, and my word, the actual video is brilliant, but the copy that he wrote underneath, like, to go with it on his blog was brilliant. He did, like, a mock-up brief of what loads of massive companies were sending out to their agencies saying, you know, oh, we need an advert, we need some plinkety-plonk music, and we need some people looking sad, and some, you know, some family time, and it was just brilliant. I mean, I can't remember the specifics now, but that blog is really worth reading.
It is.
But it's the fact that all these massive companies that have massive budgets and probably spent thousands and thousands on these adverts, they all did the same thing. And it shows, the video shows snippets of all of these adverts, and it just becomes one mesh of the same message over and over again, whereas some companies spent a lot less and ended up with such a better advert. Yeah. You know, like Tesco did an advert to show people how to shop. Because I didn't know how to shop when I had to go, you know, we couldn't get a delivery at home. I didn't know how to shop when I had to social distance and there was trolleys and people touching trolleys and all the rest of it. And actually, an advert showing me how to do that has so much more impact than an advert that's vaguely telling, you know, kind of, oh yes, we're here for you and we will beat this and all the rest of it. Okay. I need to know how are you here for me?
People still don't know how to shop though, do they?
No.
That's where the value of people like Joe comes in, right? I wrote something down that sums that last bit up, right? A good copywriter, like Joe Berthelot on our
thanks for the plug.
Right, puts meaning to the mundane. You know what I mean? Like shopping. Like Jesus Christ, shopping. Like I don't want to be taught how to shop, really. But if you put narrative behind it that gives that meaning, listen. Or the boiler story, right? The boiler story we just did that helps your kids sleep at night. Like that was nowhere near my brain. It wasn't. Right, and I'm kind of a creative guy, I like to think, right? But that was nowhere near my brain, and that's why good copywriting is such a skill. It's that level of thought, that depth, and that ability to give meaning to stuff, I think.
Yeah, and I think I pull quite a lot on personal experience as well. You know, like, we had a new boiler installed just before my first little girl was born. For the thing, ours was on its last legs. I didn't want a freezing cold house and a newborn baby. No. And then the new boiler stopped working one night when she was about 3 months old. And they were telling me that they couldn't get someone out for like 5 days when I phoned up. And I was like, no, the reason I did this was so that I didn't have a cold house with a newborn baby. And what was going through my mind there was she's not going to sleep in a freezing cold house. It's not safe for her. And she's going to be uncomfortable. So when the people who should have helped didn't help, I phoned a local plumber and I was like, it's freezing, the boiler's gone. And he was like, I'll be there, 15 minutes. And, you know, it's things like that go through my head. When someone says boiler, I remember that time. And I think putting yourself in a real situation and kind of almost not thinking too hard, just think, well, what does that person want? The person who wants to buy a boiler, what do they want? And what they want is a warm house.
So the customer, to use that, like we've talked about this, Steve, haven't we? As well, put it like being customer centred, like the marketing is the voice of the customer. And what I'm taking from what you just said is that the specifications and how well made and warrantied the boiler is not super important, but
no.
The customer story that adds the meaning to it, right?
Mm. Yeah.
Do you believe that a lot of product and services that are out there and brands that are super good at what they've made or have made the best service possible, but actually haven't done that and built that end copy in the mind of the customer?
Yeah.
Do you think they're less likely or more likely to fail? because of that? Well, should a good product always flow to the top, or will it likely disappear because of the copy?
I mean, it depends on what the product is and how good the product is, but I think it's kind of where businesses trip up, in that they can create a really good product or service, spend loads of time doing that, and then copy just isn't done and it's not done properly. And I just think it doesn't do it justice. They're not doing themselves justice because they've created something that is amazing.
Yeah.
But then they've cut corners on at the last minute. And obviously copy can be quite a last minute thing. It doesn't always have to be, but it can be. You know, you spent months kind of producing this new product or whatever, and then, you know, you've done your website and that's taken a lot of headspace as well, and you've got all, you know, everything kind of working, and then it's like, oh well now we need copy, oh never mind, we'll just write something. And it's just a shame, because it's, people put so much effort into the everything else. But so then why not do the copy as well and just get it done? And then you've got a really nice polished experience, because, like, I am sure I'm not alone in the fact that I will judge a website, I will judge a company if it's not done well. So, yeah, I think it's a real shame. I don't think it's the difference between failing or succeeding, but I think... I think it's not that you're going to fail, but you might not succeed to sort of the optimum level that you could.
Yeah. It's really interesting. Really interesting.
That's probably a good place to finish it with that soundbite, yeah. I reckon.
That's an awesome soundbite. Yeah, you're not going to reach where you need to.
There you go.
Yeah, and where you deserve to as well, because everything that you've done so far is awesome. So just,
Finish it off. Well, Joe Birfalo, thank you very much for coming on to podcast.
Been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure. So, ladies and gentlemen, all Joe's links and website address and stuff will be in our show notes. So visit her website. It's going to be immaculate, I imagine.
Gosh, everyone's going to be trying to find the one fault, aren't they now?
Yeah.
I'll include a Twitter handle to let her know if you find a typo. But it's a big thank you from me. And any final thoughts, Stephen, Rick?
No, I find copy so interesting because I'm so terrible at it. I really, really enjoyed listening. And I'm really happy that somebody else actually agrees with me, that I think, like, that some people, they look at you gone out. They're like, no, the dictionary's there. It works that way. It's like, yeah, but things evolve. You know, when emojis first came out, I was thinking, oh, we're going back to hieroglyphics, but in round things instead.
Oh, I love making up messages full of emojis, trying to get a message across to me and my best friend do it. And, like, trying to do a whole message just with emojis is amazing. I love it.
But no, thank you very much. Really appreciate you coming on.
No worries. Like I say, my pleasure. Thank you very much.
So, ladies and gentlemen, that was Joe Birfalo, a mutual friend of mine and Steve's and copywriting whiz from Crescent Copywriting. Please check them out. But it's nice to have a specialist on, somebody who's really good at a thing. Despite the fact that talented people who are good at a thing, a specific thing, always make me feel really untalented, because I'm not specifically good at anything. I'm not bad at a bunch of stuff. But I'm not good at that. And copywriting is one of the things I'm not good at. So
yeah, I always get envy of somebody who knows something in so much detail but loves it that much as well.
Yeah.
You know, like, not only is she a great copywriter, great at grammar, but also she loves linguistics and language. You know, that I wish I had that much passion for one thing, you know. But I thought she was brilliant. It's just some great hints and tips in there as well. You know, thinking about bigger when you're writing copy, not thinking about the pernickety stuff, which is a word that you've used in previous episodes, Tim. Yes. But not getting down into that level of detail, but thinking about telling the bigger story. I thought that was a really interesting viewpoint.
It is super interesting. She's new to the public wordage, really good at writing them, but she's recently done a talk for me that was new, and our friends at Like Mind and Marketed Live have done a thing that she's just done a video for, and this is her third publicity thing. And I think she handled our ethereal big thinking brain questions pretty well. So well done, Joe.
Well done. So that's it for this episode.
That's it. We're just back.
We're
back at some point with Mark Asquith and following on. But subscribe. If you like this, like, comment and share and subscribe and stuff, because feedback early doors is super interesting. We're just trying a bunch of stuff at the moment. So it would be useful to know if you like it, if you don't like it. If there's anything you'd like us to talk about or expand upon that we have said, that would be super interesting as well. But just let us know in any way you choose.
Yeah, let us know. Let us know straight through the DMs or whatever it is. But we'll see you on the next episode.
See you later.